This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehiyas Wuhib in Washington. Here is what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
Besides the curfew, other measures include limiting the number of mourners at funerals to 30 people, while other gatherings at weddings, churches, bars, bottle stores, gyms and restaurants are banned.
That's Columbus Mavunga reporting on the latest pandemic restrictions in Zimbabwe. Details coming up. And Niger is set for a presidential runoff election. All these and more ahead on African News Tonight. Our top story today is the coronavirus pandemic as several countries on the continent race to control new surges in infections. Zimbabwe has reintroduced a 12-hour dusk-to-dawn curfew to contain rising COVID-19 cases and combat citizens' disregard of lockdown regulations. The World Health Organization is calling on Zimbabweans to abide by the new regulations. As Columbus Mavunga reports from Harare for VOA News, public health experts and informal traders have concerns about the measures.
Announcing the 12-hour curfew Saturday night on national television, Vice President Constantino Chiwenga said the government was concerned by a spike in coronavirus cases in Zimbabwe.
We have seen the number of COVID-19 cases and deaths almost double in 2 months, from 8,374 on 1 November to 14,084. To debt. In light of the recent surge in COVID-19 cases, the following stiff lockdown measures are being put in place with immediate effect.
Besides the curfew, other measures include limiting the number of mourners at funerals to 30 people, while other gatherings at weddings, churches, bars, bottle stores, gyms and restaurants are banned. Chiwenga, who doubles as Zimbabwe's health minister, said a review of the new measures will be done in 30 days. Participants in the informal sector of Zimbabwe's economy says the new measures will not work. Sam Wadzai leads the activist group Vendors Initiative Social and Economic Transformation Zimbabwe.
Clearly the government has not drawn lessons from the first lockdown, where much as they announced the existence of a cushioning fund. This did not benefit the majority of informal traders. In the few cases where informal traders received this allowance, the value had long been eroded by inflation. Lockdown measures should be implemented along with introduction of proper social protection schemes to support the vulnerable for our society. Otherwise, it will be very, very difficult for the measures to be abided by.
Dr. Pamela Magande, president of Zimbabwe College of Public Health Physicians, says lockdowns should be accompanied with equipping hospitals with medicines, PPEs, and modern equipment.
The hospitals are actually difficult to work in because there's nothing to work with. Everyone needs to be brought to the table and we need to work together, because lockdown on its own, we are just delaying the inevitable. We'll emerge from lockdown and we'll have transmission again and we will be back where we started.
Dr. Alex Kasasira heads the World Health Organization in Zimbabwe. He says citizens have to embrace the new lockdown measures so that the Southern African nation can contain escalating cases of coronavirus.
If we as individuals play our role at our individual levels in our homes, in our communities, this will complement the measures that government has put in place and will enable the objective of reduced transmission being achieved in Zimbabwe in a short time.
He said personal hygiene, wearing face masks and social distance were some of the measures that individual Zimbabweans can take if the new strict lockdown measures were to bear fruit. Meanwhile, Zimbabwe police said it had arrested over 2,000 people over the New Year's holiday weekend who flouted the country's lockdown regulations imposed in March. Columbus Mavunga for VOA News, Harare.
The South African government plans to provide COVID-19 vaccinations to at least two-thirds of its population of 60 million people by the end of the year. The country is part of the World Health Organization's vaccine procurement mechanism, COVAX, but that will only be able to provide 6 million shots to South Africa in 2021. The government will have to source the rest through deals with vaccine manufacturers themselves, but no such agreements are in place yet. Darren Taylor has more.
The government announced South Africa's vaccine rollout strategy after pressure from citizens, civil society organizations, and health professionals. They'd been asking why the state wasn't sharing the plan with the African nation most affected by the pandemic. COVID-19 has led to the deaths of almost 30,000 people and infected more than a million in South Africa. Critics say the vaccine rollout should have started by now because the government should have pre-ordered vaccines from manufacturers. But Health Minister Zweli Mkhize says he couldn't take a chance on pre-ordering and paying for a vaccine that turned out to be ineffective.
Maybe today the argument would be about how government was so negligent to waste money on unproven vaccines. The risk was high.
He says the government hopes to get vaccines from COVAX by April. But Mkhize knows South Africa can't wait this long. A second wave of COVID-19 is causing infections and deaths to spike. So the state's trying to buy vaccines as soon as possible directly from manufacturers.
In fact, we are targeting February, although all of that is going to depend very much on the success of the current bilateral negotiations that we are having with various companies. So it is really more our wish, and we will not at this point say there's any company that's confirmed that date. We're just fighting to make sure we can get something earlier than that date by the COVAX facility.
The minister's negotiators are speaking to Pfizer, AstraZeneca, Johnson & Johnson, and Cipla. Deputy Director General for Health, Anban Pillay, says the government also has asked Moderna for vaccines, but the company has confirmed it's not interested in deals with South Africa. The head of the country's Vaccines Advisory Committee, Professor Barry Shoup, says science has shown that countries need to vaccinate at least 67% of their populations to achieve herd immunity.
And the figure of 67% is a rough calculation of the threshold based on the reproductive number of the virus. In addition, of course, we do need to lower the possibility of this infectious agent circulating the community. So those individuals who do get vaccinated, we aim to have them also not act to transmit the infection on an ongoing basis.
Pillay says health workers will be vaccinated in the first phase of the rollout.
Phase two looks at essential workers. These include our police officers, miners, workers in the security industry, retail, food, funeral, teachers, persons in the congregate settings, those that are in care homes, detention centers, etc., anybody who's over 60 years of age, and then finally those persons that are older than 18 years with comorbidities such as diabetes, chronic lung disease, which has been associated with...
Following this, says Mkhize, 22 million people will be vaccinated as soon as possible. Pillay says mobile teams of healthcare workers will give the jabs at workplaces, public and private clinics and hospitals, and at specially established vaccination centers. For VOA News, I'm Darren Taylor in Johannesburg.
Botswana has extended a nighttime curfew to January 31st and banned the sale of alcohol after the Southern African country recorded its first case of a new COVID-19 variant. From Habrone, Botswana, reporter Mokandisi Dube has the details.
Minister of Health Dr. Edwin Dikoloti said the new strain of the virus had been detected in Botswana. Scientists have warned the variant first discovered in South Africa spreads faster than the earlier forms of the virus.
The new strain of the virus, which was first reported in South Africa, has now been detected in Botswana. The 501V2 variant was detected by South African authorities
in mid-December and is easily transmissible.
As a result, Botswana has extended a curfew imposed over the festive season to the end of January. Dikoloti said all alcohol sales are banned with immediate effect.
The restrictions or curfew will apply from 8 p.m. to 4 a.m. daily. The sale of alcohol is suspended. Consumption of liquor in public places is also suspended. The public is informed that it has become evident that the number of COVID-19 cases in Botswana continue to rise.
Despite a surge in COVID-19 cases and the new restrictions, the country's borders remain open. However, security along the country's border with Zimbabwe has been heightened as thousands of illegal immigrants are expected to return after the festive season. South Africa has announced it will deploy the army, helicopters and speedboats along its border with Zimbabwe in a bid to keep out migrants. For VOA, this is Mkondisi Dube in Gaborone, Botswana.
Just a day before authorities in the Central African Republic were about to declare the results of last Sunday's presidential election, rebel fighters attacked and partially occupied Bangassou, a diamond mining town on the southern border with the DRC. Reuters reports at least five rebels were killed and two soldiers wounded in the clash. The United Nations mission there says peacekeepers have intervened to support the army and that the situation remains tense. Rebels launched an offensive last month after the country's constitutional court rejected former President François Bozizé's candidacy to challenge President Faustin Touadéra in last Sunday's vote. The government and the United Nations say ex-President Bozizé backs the rebels. Bozizé's party officially denies he is working with the rebels, but Reuters says some in the party have suggested they are working together. Bozizé's candidacy was rejected because he faces an arrest warrant and UN sanctions for allegedly ordering assassinations and torture while president. Bozizé has denied those charges. Nigerians are preparing for a February 21st presidential runoff after ruling party candidates Mohamed Bazoum and former president Mahaman Osamani fell short of the required 50% vote to win outright. VOA House of Service Mahmoud Lalo spoke with my colleague Chinedu Ofor from Niamey and says party supporters are looking forward to the next contest.
Vote counting is still underway with the ruling party candidate Mohamed Bazoum of PND Estareya having what many describe as a comfortable lead in the race with over 900,000 votes so far. The CENI has collated results from over 100 voting districts out of the 266 that they have around the country. So the opposition candidate Mohamed Usman of RDR party is the second candidate with the highest votes, followed by Sani Umaru of MNSD Nasara. So what will be a thorn in the flesh for Bazoum is that from what poll observers are saying, he probably can't avoid a runoff, which is scheduled for February 21st next year.
You know, the vote counting has been going on now for about 4 days since the election over the weekend. Have there been any reports of irregularities or anything like that?
So far, there's nothing in respect of that. CENI has, that is the electoral body in Niger, has confirmed the fact that they have not received any complaint of irregularities. International observers such as ECOWAS, CENSAT that takes care of countries from the Sahel region, African Union, and even internal observers have all certified the fact that their results was peaceful, there was no irregularity so far.
And if it goes to a runoff, as you say is expected, what will that look like?
A second round of election comes into play when no candidate secures 50% plus one of the total votes cast when in this first round. What we are likely going to be seeing in the coming weeks is the formation of alliances among parties. The major contending parties are now racing to seek for support from other parties as part of our preparation for the second round. But this is usually a conditional alliance where smaller parties will seek to take part in the formation of government SENI has just 5 days to finish collecting these votes, and tomorrow is the final day. So from all indication, what political observers are saying is that a second round of the election is inevitable. So what the politicians are now doing is racing to see who they are going to seek for their support to secure their victory in the next round of the election.
Let's just take a quick look at the two candidates to update our listeners. If either of them were to win in an eventual runoff or even outright, if it turns out that way in the first round, what might the country look like under each of them?
Well, let me first start by saying that Bazoum Mohamed is campaigning on issues of security, education, especially girl child education, as well as even coronavirus that is seeing an uprising in the recent wave of the pandemic. On the other hand, Mahama Usman is campaigning on change. That is his slogan. He used the word change generally, not really specifying what he means by that. But then he's saying that he's going to bring about changes for the people in Niger. Generally, whoever wins this contest is going to be faced with lots of challenges, especially to do with security issues. You know, Niger has borders with Nigeria, which is experiencing Boko Haram insurgency. It also has border with Mali, with Burkina Faso, Algeria, and even Libya. All these are countries that border Niger, which are facing a lot of insurgency, which any leader that wins this election is going to be faced with those challenges.
That was VOA's Chinedu Ofor speaking with reporter Mahmoud Lalo in Niamey. As Nigerians begin preparations of a runoff election, authorities continue to hunt for the attackers who killed at least 100 people in two villages in western Niger on Saturday. Prime Minister Brigi Rafini said it was one of the country's deadliest days in recent memory. He did not say who the attackers were, but the other officials were quoted in news reports as saying Islamist militants are suspected. Over the past several years, Niger has suffered attacks by militants linked to Al-Qaeda and the Islamic State along its borders with Mali and Burkina Faso. An improvised explosive device has killed two French soldiers in Mali Saturday, 5 days after three others died in similar circumstances. The French news agency AFP says the recent deaths bring to 50 the number of French soldiers killed in Mali since France intervened in 2013 to help drive back jihadist forces. About 5,000 French forces have been fighting jihadist groups alongside soldiers from Mauritania, Chad, Mali, Burkina Faso, and Niger, who together make up the G5 Sahel group. French President Emmanuel Macron has said his government is considering reducing the size of its forces in West Africa. A militant group linked to Al-Qaeda has claimed responsibility for the attacks. As the world continues to grapple with the coronavirus pandemic, some young people in Malawi have designed solutions to help their communities confront the challenge. This is thanks to COVID-19 Youth Innovation Challenge UNICEF organized last year for youths aged 14 to 35. The aim was to make young people change agents in their communities by offering solutions to challenges caused by the COVID-19. Five finalists out of 1,717 participants emerged winners. Among them is a 23-year-old Sam Masikini, who has developed an application known as Inspire, which can help students in rural areas with poor or no internet connection access learning resources on their phones offline. Masikini has received additional funding from UNICEF to develop his app. Reporter Lamik Masina talked with Sam Masikini about his innovation and the progress so far.
My innovation is centered around providing inclusive education to the rural area of Malawi. So we're talking about the number of youth in rural areas that get to access relevant or quality education resources and tools for their learning. To narrow it down, we're talking about an offline learning application on pretty much a basic mobile phone for these students.
What forced you exactly to come up with such an innovation?
Well, in the first place, joining the challenge, we're solving problems based on personas or characters. And I remember my character very well. Her name was Nonvelo. Her description was like, she's a student in the village. And since the coming in of COVID-19, she's no longer going to school and she would like to continue learning. And that's how it all started. And that's how I got it picked up. So that's where the whole idea was generated and I was solving for this persona. And then I discovered and I realized that, wow, there's a huge number of students in this category, especially in Malawi. And I was like, this is the way to go.
Quite interesting development. But is it a one-man show or there are other partners who are giving you a hand?
This is not a one-man working. It's a whole lot of people behind. There's MHub, there's Mzuzu Hub, there's Zuka, the Sigo Family Foundation, and so many people that I'm really grateful for. People that are driving, are the driving force of change, most specifically in our country, and people that are always there to help out in situations like this.
How will this innovation help to solve the problem of lack of internet connectivity which learners face in rural Malawi?
Thank you for that. So the application is designed to give access to education resources. And what we'll do is, or what is going to happen is that we'll have the Malawi schools curriculum for the secondary section on the application. So this application sits on the phone or in the phone with all this content. And how do we get to the students or the youth of Malawi is we're going to use the secondary schools at which they are and we'll provide these devices together with the application that has the content inside to the students via their schools. In this way, the student can access their educational resources and supplement their learning. That is if they're going back to school and practicing some policies for the COVID-19, the precautionary measures. Or they can do something in wait to learn or to reopen their schools. So in that case, they will have all visual content. So we're talking of the video and audio content as well as a few textual content.
And how many learners have you targeted? And how will this application be distributed to the learners?
For the record, UNICEF estimates 1.3 million school dropouts. And what we're looking at here, we have about 2.7 million secondary school students. And that is just a combination of both the rural and the urban areas. But be reminded that there is a whole lot of the youthful population based in the rural areas. And a large number of these 2.7 million students are, in fact, in the rural areas. And how is this going to be delivered is we'll use the school facilities where these students are based to meet a large number of these students because there's already a network of them at their school. So we can have that. And then on a different program is we can target others that were not going to school as well through their community leaders in different villages.
Sam Masikini is a young innovator in Malawi's capital, Lilongwe. He was talking with reporter Lamek Masina. And that wraps up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Yehiye Swahib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voanews.com. On behalf of our producer, Mokbilia Baro, thank you again for tuning in and choosing the Voice of America.
VOA brings you the best in African music on the African beat. African Beat showcases the latest and the greatest of contemporary African music, from bubu music to hip life, bongo flavor to soukous, Afrobeat to ndombolo and makosa to kwaito. The African Beat on VOA has it all. And it's happening right here, Mondays through Fridays at 09:05 and 20:05 UTC, right after the international news.
The Voice of America's Global News Program, International Edition, brings you an in-depth look at the biggest news stories of the day. Nobody covers the world more comprehensively than VOA. Our correspondents gather the news and the views of the most seasoned experts on international issues. Tune in Monday through Friday at 3:30 and 17:05 UTC on The Voice of America.